And I think that Legos are actually really helpful for the topic we're going to deal with today because we're all building something. We're all building something. And what we're building is going to look different for each and every one of us because we're all unique. Our structures are going to look different at the end of the day, but we're still building something. And so Legos are going to help us with our topic today. Our topic today is doubt. Doubt and faith. By the end of this, we're going to talk a little bit about what faith has to say to this, but I really want to help us unpack the idea of doubt. And there's a reason I want to do that. Several years ago, 2014, we had a conference that our family of churches attended. It was aimed at the young adults in our family of churches. It was called Summit. And so Summit had a bunch of main session speakers that you had to go to, but then they had these breakout sessions where you could choose your topic. So if the topic was interesting to you, you could just show up for that topic. And so there were three different times that they wanted to do breakout sessions. I was asked to put together three different breakout sessions. I said, sure. There were two I was really excited about. I was really excited about doing one on Friends values, you know, sort of our values as a movement of Quakers. I thought that would be really fun for college students to hear. And then I wanted to do one on community because I thought that would be really fun for college students to hear. And like almost nobody showed up for either of those. And so it's just me and a couple people talking about those things. Now the third one, the third topic I decided I was going to do was on doubt, but this was after a lot of self-reflection because I assumed that no one would show up for the topic because running a breakout session on doubt or running a seminar on doubt is a little bit like running a seminar on flatulence. If you show up, you're kind of admitting to something, you know? And so I didn't think that college students would actually show up to a breakout session on doubt because they're kind of saying, like, here I am, I have doubts. And, you know, how many of us are actually willing to say that? But that was the breakout session that was standing room only. These college students, they felt it. They knew that doubt was part of their experience, or at least the experience of a lot of their friends. And what I found out that day is just very few people like to talk about it. This is one of the first experiences many of them had had, even in wrestling with this idea of what to do when there are doubts in their lives. So over the years, I've talked about this concept of doubt with particularly college students. I haven't done it in this context yet, but the thing is, all of us will experience doubt in our lives in some way. And I want to break that down a little bit today. I want to talk about what doubt is, why it happens, and I even want to talk about sort of some steps out of it. Because doubt can be a very painful experience, as we'll discover this morning. And so here's what I want to do. To get us going, I want to look at a passage in the book of Mark. Mark chapter 9, there's this story there that I think will kind of help inform the morning. Just before this story, Jesus had taken three of the disciples and had gone through this, what we call the transfiguration, as in Jesus had just revealed his full glory to three of the disciples. But the other disciples were left behind, handling the people who are coming with questions and needing healing and all that kind of stuff, and those disciples were trying to tackle it. And so as they were doing this, Jesus comes back with the three disciples. There's a lot of stuff going on, and there's some questions going around. And so at this point in time, here's what happens. It says, a man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they couldn't do it while Jesus was gone." We're going to skip a few verses, and Jesus is going to ask the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him, but if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus. "Everything is possible for one who believes." If you can? In my mind, I think to Yoda and Luke's saying, "I'm going to try to use the force." And Yoda's like, "Do or do not. There is no try." I have to be a little bit careful because sometimes I wonder how much of my Christian theology is meshed with my Star Wars theology. I have to, like, you know, sometimes move those apart a little bit. But Jesus is keying in on a word here, right? If. If is not a word you use if you're absolutely certain something's going to happen. If is a word dripping with doubt, uncertainty, hesitancy. If you can. And Jesus, he sees this doubt in this father. This is a father who cares deeply about his son. Obviously took the time to show up to where Jesus is, so there's something about Jesus that's compelling to him. But there's doubt there. There's uncertainty. If. Can Jesus actually heal my son. No one else has been able to do it. Jesus' disciples couldn't even do it. If. Everything is possible for one who believes. And what this man is going to say next, to me, is one of the most profound things a human says, right? This isn't the words of Jesus, but this is something that a person says. And it is so raw and honest, I think it can help us too. Here's the father's reply. Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. At first, it feels paradoxical. Like, just pick one. How can you believe and not believe at the same time? You can't be both. Just land in one spot. But that's not this guy's experience. His experience is that belief and unbelief are living together at the same time. "Jesus, I've heard your reputation. I've seen what you've been doing around here. There are many people who said that you have healed them. You performed miracles no one understands. I believe what I'm seeing, and yet there's part of me that's hesitant, that hasn't internalized it yet, that is still holding back because I'm not really sure if I can fully trust that you are exactly who you say you are. And so, yes, I believe you, but also there's part of me that's holding back because I have questions that aren't answered yet. I believe, but I'm gonna need some help with my unbelief." And humans are just that complex that we can both believe and not believe at the same time. And it's that complexity that allows us to jump into this conversation about doubt. Because I think if we're honest with our own hearts, we're going to find that there's a lot about our faith that we strongly believe, and there's still parts that are very difficult for us to get our minds wrapped around. And thus, that belief and that unbelief, they coexist. And this is how Legos are going to help us out today. I guess technically these are called Duplos, right? So my mom just cleaned these off for me, and yet they're still slightly sticky from her preschool class. But, you know, for the most part, she gave it her best go. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so here's what you do throughout your life, right? Throughout your life, you're constructing your understanding of the world. Last year we talked about worldviews. It's kind of that same idea. You're constructing your understanding of the world. You're building the structure of how the world is in your eyes. And there's three things that you're basically doing at the same time. One is you're trying to understand what reality is. How is the world actually functioning? What's actually going on? What is the real world out there? And then you're trying to understand how you fit into that world. What is my identity? What is my place in this world? And finally, if you're trying to be consistent, you want to act out of those things. If this is what the world is like and this is who I am, this is how I'm going to act in that world. You're trying to harmonize all three of those things. And so this structure represents all of us trying to understand what the world is like, who we are, and how we're going to interact in the world. And it takes a long time to get there. So my daughter is 4 months old today. And 2 weeks ago, we took her to Disneyland for the first time. We took her on the Small World ride, right? And so there's that little boat that travels through the course. And the thing about Small World is it is designed, it's like sole purpose is to create sensory overload. That's what Small World does. Now, if you've been on it a couple times, you kind of know what to expect, and suddenly you just find yourself looking for hidden Mickeys. But other than that, if this, you're new to it, then this is all so much to take in. And my little daughter was just sitting in the boat like this. Everything was new. Every doll was different. Every sight was incredible. She couldn't process it all. It was too much for her. We are kind of like my daughter in that sense. When we're trying to understand the world, we're trying to look at everything that's out there. We're trying to make sense of it. We're trying to build this understanding of reality. And because we're all different, even if we're looking at the same things, our understanding of those things can sometimes be different. And so as a result, our structures are all going to look different. Much like if you throw a bunch of Legos at someone, ask them to create something, everyone's going to come up with something different. We all see the world slightly differently, even if we're looking at the same thing. And so we create the understanding of what the world is like. Now, my daughter can't do this next part. She's not old enough. But the rest of us, we try to figure out who we are in that world. We come up with a self-identity, and our self-identity gets built into this structure. And then if we're trying to be consistent, if we're trying to be people of integrity, we want to live our lives, we want to act based out of that knowledge, and so we put that into this structure as well. And over time, that structure gets bigger and more complex and bigger and more complex, and it's ever-changing. It's very difficult for any of us, anybody in this world, to actually live a life of consistency, to have all these bricks arranged in which everything follows from the next, to be able to act out of what we believe. It's very difficult. Paul talks about this in the book of Romans. He says, you know, there's all these good things that I want to do, and I don't do them. And there are these evil things I don't want to do, and I do those things. Because even if we have an understanding of what the world's supposed to be like and who we're supposed to be in it, we still don't always act that way. Being people of integrity is just difficult. Being consistent across the structure is difficult. And yet I think most of us are at least trying to. Some give up. But I think most of us want to build a consistent, healthy, strong structure and fully live into that. Now, if you're in this room, at some point, into this structure, you've introduced the idea of God. God is going to be this blue Lego brick today, all right? God's much bigger than this, I promise you. But today, this is God, this blue Lego brick. You might have been introduced to the concept of God when you were a kid. Now, God has always been with us. That's what we believe. But there's a point where you have to actually intellectually decide what to do with the God brick, right? There's a point where you actually have to decide, does God fit into your life? If you were a kid, you might not have had a huge structure yet, and so God fit very naturally. Actually, it didn't take a lot of work. You trusted that your parents believed in God. You believe in God. That's great. You put him in really quick. For others of us, we come to faith later in life. Our structure is much more complicated, and trying to put God into that structure has a lot more difficulties, maybe. Any of those could be true. But at some point, if you're here, you've at least had to contemplate the idea of, does the God brick fit in my structure somewhere? Can I conceptualize God? Does God fit into my life? Can I say God really is there, that Jesus is who he said he is? Those are things that we have to ask. And does that fit into the structure of my life I've built so far? Or are there things I have to move to make God fit? Now, ultimately, our hope is that God becomes the cornerstone, the foundation of our structure, that we build our lives based on what God is doing in us. But it usually doesn't start that way. It usually starts differently. And so once you've decided to follow Jesus with your life, now you've got to figure out what that actually looks like. And so I'm going to use these green bricks. These green bricks kind of just mean everything that comes from your belief in God, the ways in which you express your faith, the ways in which you express your belief. And there's a lot of them. Maybe for the first time you started trusting in what the Bible has to say. Maybe you started going to church for the first time, and that's in there. Maybe you started to pray for the first time. And so all these things get added into our understanding of what it means to serve God with our lives. And we continue to build our structure now with those things that are a part. And for some of you, you know, not doing these things, it's almost nonsensical. They become such a part of your life that to not go to church, for instance, just feels wrong. It's not so much a guilt as much as like something's missing, or to not have prayed with God, to talk with God, to have that absence, that just feels wrong because it's so much a part of who you are. It doesn't always start that way, though. We have to build this structure over time. Now, if we were static, if we never changed, if humans just believed one thing and stayed that way their entire lives, then we could build the structure and we could sleep pretty well at night. But the problem is we're not static. We're fluid, dynamic. We're always changing. And because we're always changing, our understanding of who God is and our understanding of the world, they morph. They change. The bricks in this structure move around a little bit. And here's what can happen. As your view of the world changes, or your view of God changes, bricks that fit together so well before maybe don't fit together quite the same. Maybe church has disappointed you one too many times, and other Christians have hurt you. Maybe you've experienced suffering that you don't think God should have allowed in your life. Maybe in this world where everything's kind of based on what we can prove empirically, the idea of God is just difficult to get your mind around. And as we grow into those things and our view of the world changes and our view of God changes, well, sometimes there creates conflict. That's going to be my last color today, these red bricks. Conflict is when your view of God, view of God's kingdom, interacts with your view of the world or yourself, and the pieces don't fit together. There's something there that just doesn't make sense. And now pieces that were once a part of your structure get broken down and get replaced by that conflict. And it's this conflict that creates doubt. I know for myself, I've gone through seasons like this in the past, right? I've had to wrestle with a lot of my own doubts when it comes to God, and there's been particularly intense seasons of that, and still, all the time, there are small seasons of that. That's part of my journey. I think that's part of most of our journeys. I spend most of my time talking about this with college students, mostly because college is sort of this sort of intense worldview recreation thing. For like 3 or 4 years, you're really trying to think through, be exposed to things you've never been exposed to before. So your bricks, they shift a lot during college. And so inevitably, there's going to be some conflicts that show up and cause doubt. But it's not a uniquely college phenomenon. I was a junior high pastor for a lot of years, and so one of the things that I would often do is I'd take junior hires up to a summer camp or something like that, and we'd have a worship service, and someone would ask, do you want to give your life to Christ? And they would say, yes, I do, and they'd actually walk forward to the stage, and they would give their life to Christ right then and there, and I believe everything about them was sincere in that moment. But so maybe you've experienced this. Sometimes when we say yes to God, but we don't know what we're saying no to, our faith just isn't very mature yet. And as those same students who are so passionate about God earlier in their life, they grow older and they start to see what the rest of the world is like and what saying yes to God means as far as saying no to other things, it creates conflict. And as genuine as that faith was, there is now this doubt there. And left to its own devices, over time, these doubts, they can begin to dismantle everything you understood about your faith to the point where you're really just left wondering, is God even viable anymore? And so I know plenty of people who they've dismantled so much of what they believe that even God himself, wasn't tenable. And they decided, I just don't believe that anymore. Or I actually see this more often, they never really answered the question about whether or not God is real in their life, but they just had so many other doubts that by default, they just kind of boxed them out. And the rest of their life was built with keeping God in this tiny little pocket. And so functionally, God didn't have any meaning in their life. I've seen that just enough that it hurts. Because doubt is actually a painful experience. If you're here this morning, you should know this. This is a faith community. When I say faith community, the community part is that we want to be there for each other. We're here. We're supposed to have each other's backs, that kind of a thing. We're growing together. But when I say faith community, what I also mean is that we have a shared set of beliefs, generally speaking. There's some things that we believe in, namely Jesus Christ died and risen again. There's some other things that we believe along with that. And so in a faith community, you're not just in community with people, you have a shared set of beliefs. Well, what happens if you start to question the beliefs of your faith community? Well, now you're forced to ask some really uncomfortable questions. Do I fit there anymore? Does this community still make sense for me? Can I still be a part of these people? If they found out that I had doubts, would they even accept me? And all of that is extremely painful, which is why I think Jude gives us this very straightforward piece of advice. He says, be merciful to those who doubt. Be merciful to those who doubt. Because it's a painful process. It's not easy. It's actually quite difficult. And so if at any point in time in your life you've expressed doubts and you've had people not respond well, I want you to know that that's not the charge of Christians. Christians are to be the most merciful people in the midst of doubt. Because we know that some of the things that we talk about, some of the things that we believe, are difficult in our modern world. We know that. But we believe them fervently anyway, and we'll talk about it in just a moment. These things, these doubts that we have, they're hard. They sit on our heart. And whether we're going through them or you have a close family member or friend who's going through a season of extended doubt, you know how hard it is. We wish we could just make it go away, like snap our fingers and solve all the tensions, get rid of all these conflicts, make them just disappear. But it doesn't work that way. Because each of us have to figure out what to do with these conflicts on an individual level so we can build these structures. Now, what I do believe that there is a way forward, okay? We'll go back to Mark chapter 9, verse 24, right? So this is our father who's talking about, you know, he wants Jesus to heal his son. He says, I do believe, help me overcome my unbelief. There are two things here that I think are really important for us to get right before we keep going. The first is that doubt is a very normal part of the Christian journey. Very normal. This is something that is part of who we are. And I'll tell you why this happens. I think that there's actually some virtue here, okay? If we are actually trying to grow in our faith, if we're actually going to be people sent by God into the world, we're going to encounter new ideas, new people, new trains of thought we've never encountered before. And that should jostle our structure a little bit. It should actually cause some conflicts that we have to work through. And so doubt is a critical part of the growing process. It just happens. We don't grow without it because we have to expand our concept of who God is and how God is working in this world. But, and this is the second thing we get from this verse, we don't want to stay there. We don't want to stay there. Help me overcome my unbelief. It's a cry from the heart. I want to be a person of integrity. I want to live out a life where I understand who I am in God's kingdom. I want to be a person of integrity, consistency. I don't want to live in all these doubts. I want to move forward in confidence that God is at work in this world. So we don't want to stay there. And so I do believe that there are pathways forward, ways that we keep moving together. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. Now, this part isn't necessarily in Scripture. This is something that I just observe. It seems to ring pretty true for me. But here's how I conceptualize doubt. I divide it into two categories. The first category is that of objective doubt. Objective doubt is the kind of doubt where you're actually questioning the reality of God in the world in a sort of an abstract external sense. Is God real? Is Jesus who he said he was? Right? In our scientific world, where proving things is really important, where what we see is really important, is God real? Okay? And so this would be sort of the doubt of the mind, if you will. Can I actually get my mind around this idea that God is real when so many people are telling me that he's not? Now, objective doubt is something that, at least in small doses, is probably good for us to reckon with, right? There's actually this whole branch of kind of Christian studies called apologetics, and the whole point behind apologetics is to identify that there really are good reasons for what we believe. That's what we do. And so when we're dealing with objective doubt, one of the things that is helpful for us to do is to be honest with God and to be honest with others. You're going to catch this theme. When we're honest with God about the doubts that we have, which sounds paradoxical, to pray to a God that you're not even sure if he exists, right? But when we're honest with this God who wants to have a relationship with us, what I think we'll find is that as we pray, as we continue to struggle with this, he's going to provide us with the things that we need to continue to move toward him. They might be surprising in some ways, but it's worth engaging the mind. You know, there's some things that we have to remember. One is our capacity as humans to know something is actually really poor. We're really bad at knowing things. We're very biased toward the things that we can directly see and directly prove through experiments, right? That's sort of our bias. But when you step back for a second and realize just how small we are in this giant world and that we only have five very limited senses and that although God has blessed us with rationality, our minds are so small in this world, we don't have the capacity to see everything. We really don't. Now, I'm not saying that I'm anti-science. Actually, I think that one of the best things we can do is to take the best scientific knowledge we have and apply it to the good of humanity. God, in his grace to us, knows this. We actually tend to take science and misuse it first. We tend to make it destructive before we make it constructive. But we can make it better. We can use science to help even build out God's kingdom, to help people experience God's fullness in ways that we didn't have before. But it's limited. Science cannot tell us whether or not God exists. Those are different things. That's a philosophy. We have to be careful not to confuse the two. And thus, I really believe this, and this I think applies to everybody, belief in God is at least as viable as any attempt to say that God doesn't exist. Both of them are actually very equally difficult to prove from a scientific standpoint in some ways. So you're at least coming on an even playing field. But I believe this too. And I'd be happy to show you more of these resources. If this is something that has kind of grabbed you this morning, I'd love to have these conversations. I really do believe that the body of evidence is weighed in favor of God being real and Jesus Christ being who he said he is. And when you look at the evidence that exists, that's where the weight lies. It is not that there isn't any evidence on the other side, it's just not nearly as compelling. And me personally, I'm staking my life on that claim. So I really do believe that God has this ability to help us, even when we have objective doubts about God's presence in this world. And sometimes we need to have those doubts. We need to be challenged. There's an author, her name was Rachel Held Evans. She passed away very unexpectedly recently, and so some of her words are sticking with me more than usual now. But one of the things that she'd like to say is that the only people never disturbed by the Bible are the people who've never read it. There's some things that we need to be disturbed by. There's some concepts of this world that we need to have challenged. We need to rethink sometimes who God is and what it looks like. And so some of that conflict is good, but we can do this in prayer with God, and we can do this with other people. If you are having objective doubt in your life, beyond praying to God, find those Christians in your life whom you trust, those ones who you find reasonable, who seem to have a good grasp on God in this world, and talk to them. Because if you trust them, you might learn something from them too. And we can move forward in community together. Now, the other kind of doubt is actually very different. This is subjective doubt. Subjective doubt is more a doubt of the heart. And this is what happens when God doesn't show up for you the way that you expect him to. So this kind of thing happens when there's an unexpected job loss, or when there's a sickness, or even if a family member passes away and you don't understand how God could allow that to happen. Suffering is one of the biggest things that create subjective doubt. But it could also be as simple as, I just don't feel God in my heart right now. I show up for worship, and I sing the songs, and I pray, and I just don't feel God there. That lack of feeling God becomes subjective doubt. It's not that I have a problem with the idea that God exists, it's just he doesn't seem to be showing up in my life, at least not the way I thought he was going to. And this is equally valid, because we serve a relational God, a God who actually wants to change our hearts. And so when we're having a heart-level issue with God, this is something that's actually really important. It actually really matters. God wants to shape our hearts. He wants to meet us even in our times of suffering and doubt. Now, what I found is that when I'm experiencing subjective doubt, the pathway is actually very similar to objective doubt, which is to come before God, who is relational, to present the ways in which God isn't showing up for you the way that you think he should, kind of like David does in the Old Testament. God, why are these things happening around me? I don't understand. And to find other Christians who are on this journey, to be honest about those doubts with them too. Say, I don't get how God could allow this to happen or why this is happening this way. What have we learned together? Generally speaking, if we can get to a place where we have a strong objective faith or a strong subjective faith, as in one of these things might be broken but the other one's holding us through, it can carry us for a long time. If we really do believe that God is out there and Jesus is who he says he is, even if we're not feeling it or it's not coming out the way that we want it to, that objective truth holds us and sustains us even when God isn't doing what we think God should be doing. Or if we don't seem to be able to get our minds around how can God be real in this world, but we know that he keeps showing up in our life, that can sustain us too. When both happen at the same time, I think that's probably when you start to get a lot more red. But either way, the goal isn't to stay where you are. And so as an exercise this morning, maybe check your own heart. Are there doubts in your heart? And if there are, do they land more in the objective camp or more in the subjective camp? Is it more a doubt of, is God real? Is Jesus who he says he is? Or is it more a doubt caused by God not showing up for you? And from there, we actually have some language to go before our community, to go before God and say, what's up with this? And we can start to take these red bricks and see if we can resolve these conflicts by either changing our view of the world, changing our view of ourselves, or changing our view of God, and see if we can begin to restructure something. And the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verse 1, and we get this really interesting understanding of what faith is. This is where faith comes back into the conversation. Here the author says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. All right, now, there's two really important things about faith that we need to take from this verse. One is that faith isn't just anything. There's a confidence in the thing that we're hoping for. We know what we're hoping for. We know that we're hoping for Jesus buried and raised again. We know that. Faith isn't just anything. It's specific. But we also know that faith is not certainty. They're not the same thing. We want assurance about what we do not see. those things that still remain mysterious to us in some ways. Faith is not certainty. Now, I do think that we have faith when we really do generally operate out of belief more than unbelief, but it's not certainty, not in the classical scientific sense where we can prove everything all the time. Because if faith was certainty, then really any time that we have doubt, we should be pretty scared. But it's not. In fact, and this is something that was alluded to earlier, a step of faith can be expressing your doubt. That seems paradoxical. A step of faith can be expressing your doubt. Because if you're willing to take your doubts, objective or subjective, and put them before God, or put them before other believers, what you're really saying is, there's some conflicts in my life I haven't resolved, but ultimately I believe that God is bigger than my red brick. And he's going to help me persevere through this reshaping season in my life. That's a step of faith, where you are actually acting out of your core belief that God is at the center. That's where belief and unbelief meet together. I'm going to step forward toward God in belief. I'm going to ask God to help me with my unbelief, to reshape my mind, my understanding of who he is and who I am in this world. What I really think happens over that process is that we begin to reconstruct the structure that had so many issues. We find that many of the conflicts we had weren't that big of a deal. Some of the conflicts that we had, there's actually really good answers for. And others, you know what? I haven't figured that one out yet. There's some questions in life, it's really okay to say I don't know too. And sometimes we just identify what that is and we keep building anyway because at the core of it, we believe that God is at work and we are able to deal with the fact that we don't understand it all. And when we're honest with our doubts and we put it before God and we put it before our community, then this structure becomes stronger than it has ever been. Because our view of God has expanded. Our view of how God is working in the world has expanded. And our passion for seeing God's kingdom promoted throughout this world, people understanding how much God loves them, it grows even deeper. Our hearts grow for God's people and for God. And throughout our life, these little red bricks are going to come up. As our worldview expands, as we encounter new people, things that we've never thought through before, we're going to have these red bricks. But out of faith, we can present them before God. Say, God, I don't have it all figured out. I don't know what is going on here. But I trust you more than I trust this issue in my life. Bring me through. Help me find people who are going to help me work this out so that I can continue on with the business of spreading your kingdom everywhere I go. God, today we want to be people of faith. And by that I mean people who are willing to put our red bricks on the table, who are willing to put our doubts out there and say, God, we don't have it all figured out yet, but we're going to act in faith that you are bigger than our doubts. So God, I pray that you meet us in our conflicts, meet us in our uncertainties, that God, we would declare loud that we believe, but God, may you also help us in our unbelief. In your name we pray. Amen.